An animated book opens and a city block rises from its blank pages. A low view moves down a main street, settling outside a movie theater. Illuminated by blinking lights, the marquee reads, Amazon Studios. On a bright white background, a logo and lettering fade into focus. Washington Square Films. A copper coin flips and tumbles on cracked pavement. The coin features the profile of a man with a flat-top haircut. The pavement dissolves, leaving the man's profile in a logo. I am 21. Amazon Studios presents, in association with Washington Square Films, Black Maple Films. Sitting in a dimly lit bedroom, a short-haired young man loads bullets into a revolver. An I Am 21 production. Teenage girls jump rope on a city sidewalk. A film by Matt Ruskin. Young men flee down the city block. Based on a true story. Lying in bed, a young man with dreadlocks turns the dials on his radio. Words appear. April 10th, 1980. The man rises and gets dressed. In the hall, a middle-aged woman confronts him.
Boy, don't come sneaking in here in the middle of the night.
Hey, what's going on?
Just go back to sleep.
Who's that?
None of your business. Oh, and the TV is in the shop. Go and pick it up this afternoon.
In another bedroom, a shirtless young man with a thin beard kisses a dark-eyed woman. They hold each other in a close embrace.
I gotta go to class.
The woman continues kissing him. The bearded man sits up, then gives her another kiss. The man sits on the edge of the bed and puts on a shirt.
Don't let my mother see you leave.
He gives her a final kiss, then sneaks into the hallway wearing glasses. At an auto shop, the man with dreadlocks and the bearded man lean over a car's engine. Later, some of the mechanics chat.
I'm telling you, it was a real thing.
I call it bullshit dread.
It was called the Black Star Line.
What are you going to Africa for? Me come from the West Indies, just like
no,
you.
No, man, that's where we ended up. But we all came over on slave ships. Imagine if all the policemen, all the politicians, and all the businessmen were your people.
What are you talking about?
Marcus Garvey.
I can't get the man to go to Harlem and he want to go back to Africa.
Hey! None of you are going to be graduating if you keep fucking up!
The man with dreadlocks looks into an office.
Hey, you around still paying for cars?
Yeah, same as always. Just bring anything off the street through the back.
All right.
On a city street, the man with dreadlocks uses a metal wire to break into a sedan. He climbs inside. A muscular man runs out of a home, fastening his pants.
Yo! That's my car! What are you doing?
The dreadlocked thief drives away.
I'm gonna kill this fool!
Later, the man with dreadlocks leaves a local shop holding a small TV. He goes to the stolen sedan. Later, he drives down the street, stopping in traffic. The muscular man pulls up in a different car and gets out. The man tries to grab onto the sedan as the thief drives away. The thief swerves from an oncoming car and crashes. The dreadlocked thief gets out of the smoking sedan. He grabs his TV and walks away. Nighttime. Carrying the TV, the man with dreadlocks notices a curly-haired young woman carrying grocery bags. He sets down the TV and approaches her.
Hey, Antoinette. Let me help you.
Hey, Colin. Thank you.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you in a while. How's your mom doing?
She's good. I had to get this TV fixed for her.
Oh, Well, say hi for me.
They enter Antoinette's apartment building.
Oh, right there is fine.
Colin sets down the grocery bags. He stands face to face with Antoinette, gazing at her.
Can I help you with something?
Will you go with me sometime?
Antoinette, is that you?
Wearing an uneasy expression, she glances at the floor. Colin leaves the building.
Colin. Thanks.
He pauses and smiles at her.
Tomorrow?
She smiles back.
I'll think about it.
Colin nods and walks off. With a thoughtful gaze, Antoinette closes the front door. Colin carries his TV near an elevated train track. As he heads down an alley, a black sedan cuts off his path.
Colin Warner?
Nothing funny.
Watch him. There we go.
Against the car. Come on. Hey.
Two men in suits grab Colin.
Get off me, man.
Stop this guy.
What are you doing?
There we think you're going to get him.
Okay. Right. There we go. Nice and easy.
The detectives cuff him and put him in the back seat.
Go way in.
Colin looks around anxiously as the men get back into the car. They drive off. In an interrogation room, the balding detective and a gray-haired man face Colin, who sits handcuffed to the table.
Look, the best thing you could possibly do for yourself right now is tell me what happened. This is not gonna go away. It's in the middle of the fucking afternoon, for Christ's sake. So go ahead. Why did you shoot Marvin?
Excuse me?
Did he owe you money? Is that why you shot him?
I didn't shoot anybody.
We have an eyewitness who picked you out of a photo ID.
I'm sorry, sir. You guys have made a mistake.
Do you know what's going to happen to you if you don't start cooperating?
The gray-haired man presents a document.
This is a statement acknowledging your involvement in the shooting of Marvin Grant. Everything in here has been corroborated by an eyewitness. You understand what that means?
Colin stares at the statement. He slides the paper back across the table.
I'm not signing that. There ain't no killer.
Now Colin gets his fingerprints taken. Wearing a numbered board around his neck, the suspect stands with a firm scowl. Daytime. Colin looks out the grated windows of a bus as it arrives at a prison. The young man wears a miserable expression. A guard opens the door and the prisoners file off the bus. Colin looks around nervously. A guard leads the new arrivals toward a building. Inside, the prisoners file through a narrow, dim hallway. Inmates on a second floor look down at the new arrivals. Guards tussle with a struggling prisoner. A guard leads Colin into a cell and shuts the door. At the garage, the bearded young man works under a car.
Casey, phone for you. I'll call him back, please. It's something about Colin. They said it's urgent.
Now Casey faces a woman.
What's the prisoner's name?
Colin Warner.
She flips through a large book.
Nope, he's been denied bail.
For how long?
Till he goes to trial, unless the judge rules otherwise.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Dredd.
Casey visits Colin.
So where's my mother?
She had to go to work. Something with the boss.
Frowning, Colin glances off.
You all right, man?
It's fucked up in here. And no matter what I say, nobody wanna listen to me. Not even my own mother.
Brethren, the truth is going to come out, all right? Just hang in there until the trial starts.
From his cell, Colin listens in on other prisoners.
Them boy there, I kill up enough people out there.
You heard about those shootings in Flatbush?
Yeah, they grabbed some bread that had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, man, them catch a rat, you know.
Yo, it's me you talking about!
Hey, shut the fuck up in there!
As a guard passes by, Colin sits on his cot. Later, the guard leads the prisoners out to the hall. In the cafeteria, Colin glances around anxiously, then looks at fellow prisoners.
Hey, did you hear that guy that was talking about those shootings in Flatbush?
Nah.
What about you?
One of them points out a middle-aged prisoner at another table. Colin picks up his tray and sits across from the older man.
Hey, do you know a guy named Marvin Grant?
He used to live in my building.
The police are saying I killed him. They're saying I shot him.
He shot a guy named Spangler a couple days before he was murdered. So Spangler's cousin was out for revenge.
A glimpse shows the short-haired man loading the revolver. The teenage girls jumping rope halt. Two young teenage boys gaze down the empty city block. In slow motion, a person flees the street corner. In a bedroom, KC's girlfriend admires herself in a mirror. Lying in bed, KC answers the phone.
Hello?
This is a collect call from the Department of Corrections. Do you accept the charges?
Yeah, I accept. Hello?
KC, listen. There's a guy named Anthony Gibson killed Marvin. There's a guy in here who knows what happened. I need you to go down to the 67th precinct. Tell him this guy is willing to talk. I gotta go.
All right.
Who was that?
It was Colin. He found out about the shooting.
KC gets dressed.
I gotta go to the precinct.
KC and his girlfriend arrive at a police station.
Excuse me.
An officer ignores them.
I need to speak to a detective about the Marvin Grant homicide.
You gotta come back tomorrow. No one's here right now.
No, I have information about a homicide. It can't wait till tomorrow.
I'm telling you, no one's here now.
KC stares at the desk officer.
That's your badge number there? You wanna make the call or you want me to file a complaint? I have all night to fill out paperwork. Ain't that right, baby?
Damn straight.
Scowling at the couple, the desk officer picks up a phone. The balding detective and the gray-haired man drive up to the prison.
How you doing?
What's up, Jimmy?
A guard opens the gate. Inside, the balding detective and the gray-haired man meet with the middle-aged prisoner.
So let me get this straight. You're saying this guy, Anthony, was the shooter and not Colin?
That's right.
So Colin was the driver?
No, Colin had nothing to do with it.
Who told you this?
Some people.
Some people?
They're not going to talk to the police. They know the people involved. The whole neighborhood know what happened. The whole neighborhood know you grabbed the wrong guy.
Well, unless the whole neighborhood wants to testify, you're wasting my time. Let's go.
The middle-aged prisoner scowls with his arms crossed. Now, wind blows the curtains of an open apartment window. In a flashback, Colin sits up in bed. He puts on a jacket. KC sleeps in a chair nearby.
Where are you going?
I get that piece of cake from the store.
Get me one too.
Colin walks to the door and wraps his hand around the knob. In his cell, Colin pulls his hand away from the barred gate. The inmate hangs his head with a defeated expression. Rapid images flicker. Now, a close view shows ocean surf washing up. A slender boy wearing only shorts dribbles a soccer ball on the beach. The boy jostles with a smiling man for control of the ball. Near a small fire, the boy hands a knife to an elderly woman holding a plantain. The sun sets behind tall palm trees. woman looks up.
Please don't let it be a cell.
A prison cell fades into focus. Water drips from a sink. Colin lies on his cot. Slowly, he sits up with a weary expression. Words appear. 6 months.
Let's go, on your gate. On the count.
In a courtroom, Colin gets escorted to the defense table, where the short-haired man sits.
This is docket 7442.
Your Honor, the people are going to try Colin Warner and Anthony Gibson together for the murder of Marvin Grant. I'm requesting that these cases be consolidated under the original indictment.
Request is granted.
Are you the guy that killed Marvin?
Don't be asking me that. Ain't no concern of yours.
But they're saying I did it, man. You gotta tell them I'm innocent.
They ain't saying nothing like that. If they wanna say that I did it, they're gonna have to prove it.
But they got me in here for it, man.
I don't know why you're here. It ain't got nothing to do with me.
Come on, let's go.
Anthony follows a guard out of the holding area. In his cell, Colin sticks a photo to the wall. He jogs in place. Outside the auto shop, KC poses for a group photo. He and other young men hold up their diplomas. In prison, an inmate passes a cigarette to their neighbor. Television images rapidly flash. A date appears, 1981. Ronald Reagan gives a speech.
Crime today is an American epidemic. The American people are reasserting the belief that right and wrong do matter, and that retribution must be swift and sure for those who decide to make a career of preying on the innocent.
2 years. Anthony and Colin attend a courtroom.
We move to adjourn for a month.
Where are the attorneys for the defense?
They're never here, Your Honor.
What's going on with this case?
We're preparing for trial. We've been unable to locate the witness.
You're referring to Clarence Lewis?
Yes, Your Honor.
When was the last contact with Mr. Lewis?
18 months ago.
18 months?
That's correct.
Well, you have 2 weeks to be ready for trial, or I'm giving the defendants a drastically low bail.
Yes, Your Honor.
Colin glances from the prosecutor to the judge. Nighttime. One of the young teen boys who was with the jump roping girls walks down a city street. Words appear. 8 days later. Standing at the back entrance to a restaurant, the teen puts on a ski mask and draws a gun. He enters and threatens a cook washing dishes.
Get the fuck out!
The teen goes through the kitchen and aims his pistol at a female clerk.
Open the fucking register! Open the fucking register!
She cowers as he snatches money. A man with a baseball bat strikes the thin teen from behind. The thin teen collapses. In prison, a clean-cut man in a suit approaches Colin's cell. He sits in a chair with a gate between them.
Colin? Bruce Regan's ranch. The court appointed me to represent you at trial. So they have the eyewitness in custody, and they want to move quickly because of this judge. So first hearing is going to be set for next week.
They phone a witness?
Yeah, he was picked up on a robbery charge last night. Any idea why he's implicating you?
No, I don't even know him. And I got the guy who did it.
Oh, you mean Anthony?
Yeah.
You didn't know him?
No, I don't know any of these guys. I'm telling you, I had nothing to do with this.
All right, look, these guys, they're stuck with an impossible number of cases, and they just want convictions. And they'll throw whatever they can at you. But right now, they don't have a lot to work with. Other than the eyewitness, there's nothing. There's no motive, no weapon, there's no physical evidence. So this is a case we can actually win.
You've done murder cases before?
I used to be a homicide DA. It's all I did, just for the other side.
Colin nods. Now an inmate barber works on Colin's dreadlocks. In a parked car, the balding detective and the prosecutor sit with the thin teen.
How old are you, Clarence?
15.
How old do you want to be when you get sent back to Haiti?
You understand what he means?
You're getting deported when you get out of prison. You're not going back to Brooklyn. You want to start your life over when you're 18 or when you're 40? We can make either of those happen, but you got to pick.
In the courtroom.
Your Honor, the people call Clarence Lewis to the stand.
Now with short hair, Colin watches a bailiff escort Clarence to the stand. The gray-haired prosecutor approaches the teenage witness.
Clarence, who is driving the car?
Colin.
And who else was in the car?
Anthony was in the passenger seat.
And what happened when they stopped the car?
Wearing a conflicted expression, Clarence gazes toward the defendants.
Anthony shot him.
You mean Colin?
No. Anthony.
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
The judge gives the prosecutor a piercing look.
No further questions?
Bruce approaches the witness.
Presently, Mr. Lewis, you're being charged with armed robbery. Is that correct?
Yes.
And did you know you can receive up to 25 years in prison if you're convicted?
Yes.
And Mr. Lewis, did anybody from the district attorney's office advise you that if you testified in this case, that you'd receive only 2 years? Were you ever advised of that?
Yes.
Objection.
So by testifying against Mr. Warner, you're receiving a dramatically lower jail sentence.
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained.
Mr. Lewis, when you first spoke to Detective Cassell, did you tell him that Colin Warner shot Marvin Grant?
Yes.
But that wasn't true, was it?
No.
You lied to Detective Cassell?
Yes.
And when you went before the grand jury, you knew in your mind, did you not, that Colin Warner never shot Marvin Grant? Is that right?
Yes.
So you lied to the grand jury?
Yes.
KC and Colin's mom watch from the audience.
No further questions.
Later.
They're willing to offer you 2 to 5 years.
Bruce faces Anthony.
If you take this deal, they'll drop all the charges against Colin. You understand? You can't possibly get a lighter sentence for second-degree murder. And Colin will walk free right now.
You want time to think about it?
Yeah.
Colin eyes Anthony. Later, the judge sits at his bench.
Counsel, have you made a decision?
Your Honor, my client has refused the offer and maintains his plea of not guilty before the court.
A guard leads Colin and Anthony to a holding cell. Colin waits for the guard to walk off, then grabs Anthony by the neck.
I should be going home right now. That kid didn't see nothing. Yo, he don't know shit.
You have the guts to take a man's life, have the guts to pay the penalty for it.
Colin throws Anthony to the floor. He paces, then sits on a bench, glaring. In the courtroom, the prosecutor questions a scruffy man.
What's your relationship to the victim?
He was my brother.
And were you close?
Very, yes.
So it's safe to say you knew who your brother was hanging around with?
Yes.
Did you know Colin Warner and Anthony Gibson before your brother was killed?
Yes.
Did you ever see them with your brother Marvin?
Yes, I had seen them around.
And do you have reason to believe they wanted to kill your brother?
The scruffy man stares in thought.
Yes.
Colin Warner and Anthony Gibson set out on April 10th, 1980 to kill Marvin Grant. It doesn't matter who was driving the car. This was not a random act of violence. This was premeditated murder. The defendants were out for revenge. And when they gunned down Marvin Grant in broad daylight, people saw them do it.
Colin stares sadly at the jury. In the holding cell, Anthony and Colin wait with solemn expressions. In the courtroom, the jury foreman rises.
Has the jury reached a verdict?
Yes, Your Honor.
The parties will please rise.
Both sides comply.
And what is your finding?
We find the defendant, Anthony Gibson, guilty of murder in the second degree. We find the defendant, Colin Warner, guilty of murder in the second degree.
Colin's mother sobs. KC consoles her. Colin glances back at them. The judge addresses the court.
Is this verdict true? I don't pretend to know. I don't have the capacity to actually know. A life has been taken. The jury has spoken. In the case of Anthony Gibson, the court will give the maximum juvenile sentence of 9 years to life. In the case of Colin Warner, the court will give the minimum allowable sentence of 15 years to life.
Colin sheds tears.
You are hereby sentenced.
The convicts rise with their lawyers. Casey and Colin's mom look on gravely. Colin glances sadly at them as the bailiff leads him away. Barbed wire fences surround a large prison compound. Colin stares at the buildings through the transport bus windows. Words appear. Maximum Security State Prison, Dannemora, New York. In a room, prisoners take off their clothes.
Next!
A guard wearing a breathing mask holds a pressure sprayer.
Arms out!
A prisoner lifts his arms and the guard sprays his body with a white mist.
Turn around!
The guard sprays his backside.
Next!
Eyes glistening, Colin approaches the guard.
Arms out! Arms out!
Crying, Colin complies. The guard sprays him.
Turn around!
The guard sprays Colin's backside.
Next!
In a flashback, Colin drives a car down the street. Golden sunlight shines through his open window. Cut to black.
Please don't let it be a cell.
A close view shows the plain cinder block walls of a prison cell. Light shines in from a small window with bars and a grate. Colin lies down with a melancholy expression. He and the other prisoners emerge from their cells and stand in the doorways. A guard comes to an empty doorway, then enters. Another guard rushes past Colin to join the first one. They remove a prisoner with a bloody stomach from his cell.
Deep lock. Get a stretcher up here, please.
You never know how sacred your freedom is until it's jeopardized.
KC reads a letter.
It feels like I wasn't even a person. You feel unloved.
Colin helps the bald inmate with the stomach wounds.
You wanted to stop, but my life was not in my hands anymore.
Casey looks up from the letter and stares off pensively. In a visiting room, Colin joins his mother at a table. She gazes downward.
Casey, drop off some money for your commissary. And make sure you don't run out.
You okay?
I just thought it would be fair. I never thought they would do this if you didn't do anything. I don't know you the way a mother should know her son. I wanted to know you better. I really wanted that.
It's not your fault. It's okay.
Colin strokes his crying mother's arm. In the cafeteria, he sits across from the bald inmate. The inmate stares at Colin as he eats.
Come on.
Listen, you and I are friends. If something happens, I can't protect you. Understand? You gotta be with the other West Indians for that.
Colin notices the bald man's firm stare.
Laid out in the courts.
In the prison yard, inmates congregate among wooden pallets, chairs, and random items of furniture. A muscular prisoner mans a smoking grill. He serves food to the others. The muscular inmate arranges food on a tray and hands it off. Colin approaches. The inmate scoops food into a bowl and offers it. Colin accepts it, and the inmate nods for him to take a seat.
You're from Brooklyn?
Yeah, from Crown Heights.
You'll be from Brownsville.
Colin stuffs food in his mouth. The muscular inmate smiles.
You ain't taste anything like that in a while.
Not since my grandmother cooking.
She come over with you?
She never flew on an airplane. She never ride a bike. She never even wore pants. But she raised me like her son. Thank you.
Later, Colin uses the phone.
Colin, I filed the initial appeal. I just wanted to let you know that it went in.
When will they notify us?
Unfortunately, it could take years.
Staring off, Colin lowers the phone from his ear. He frowns and hangs it up. In his cell, Colin stares through the slender window in his door. Later, he sits on his cot. Now, a bald guard ushers Colin and the other inmates.
Let's pick up the pace, guys.
Colin maintains his slow pace. The guard pushes him with a baton.
Come on, man, keep it going, come on.
Colin stops.
I told you, keep moving, come on. I said fucking go!
The bald guard slams Colin against the wall. A female guard pulls Colin away.
Get the fuck off me!
Calm down!
You understand me? I'm not one of your prisoners, man!
You gotta go back to your cell right now. Go back to your cell right now!
No, I'm an innocent man!
I'm
an innocent man!
If you don't start walking, he's gonna make your life hell right now. I don't wanna see nothing bad happen.
She leads Colin away. In a corridor, Colin smokes with the muscular prisoner.
Got to be careful with the guards. They're small-minded. I'm gonna cut you no slack, especially no killer like you.
I'm not no killer, man. I'm serious. I never killed nobody. You got everyone saying you did something. After a while, you start to question yourself.
Colin locks eyes with his companion. In a stairwell, they carry brooms. Guards lead two prisoners up the stairs. One with long hair attacks the muscular prisoner. The guard pulls him off. A curly-haired prisoner scowls.
Shut the fuck up!
You need to try to catch me in the shower, motherfucker. Fucking faggot.
Yo, what the fuck was that?
Nothing, man. Don't pay no mind.
Colin follows his friend. Exterior views show the prison. In a corridor, the curly-haired prisoner sneaks up behind Colin. He wraps a towel around him, holding his arms back. Another inmate approaches.
Anybody gonna fucking die? It's payback time, motherfucker.
He clubs Colin, who collapses. Fade to black. With his face sweaty and bruised, Colin leans against the wall of his cell. In the courts, Colin approaches the muscular inmate, who eats from a bowl. Colin glares.
Who do that to you?
You don't know?
Staring at Colin, the muscular inmate sets down his food. He stands and approaches him.
You got something you want to say to me?
Look, I can't be associated with the things you do. I could get killed for that.
He headbutts Colin to the ground.
Then go inside and eat. And have no more friends in the courts.
Stumbling, Colin stands and walks off. A slow-moving view takes in a cell block. Words appear. 6 years. In the phone room, Colin talks to KC. At home, KC holds a baby in his lap.
Bridget, it's the girl. I wish you could see her, man. She's gonna know her uncle Colin, all right? I promise you that.
Gripping the phone, Colin wears a pained expression.
Congratulations, Bridget.
Thanks,
man. Casey hangs up and kisses his daughter on the forehead. The baby's mother gently takes the child from KC and rocks her. Colin hangs up the prison phone. Later, he meets with Bruce.
I wanted to tell you this in person. The appeal was denied. They admitted the evidence was weak, far from overwhelming. It's the way they put it, but they still ruled against us. Well, there's potentially other grounds for appeal, but you should find an appellate attorney who does this on a regular basis.
Wearing a troubled look, Colin stares off. In his neighborhood, KC knocks on a door.
Sorry to bother you, but we're raising money for Colin's appeal, so anything you could contribute would help.
Here you are. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Here, take this.
KC counts money and puts it in an envelope. He knocks on another door. Antoinette answers with a little girl trailing behind her.
KC!
Antoinette, when'd you get back?
I just got off active duty last month. This is my daughter,
nice
Sasha.
To meet you.
What are you doing here?
You remember Colin?
Yeah, of course.
He got arrested for murder he didn't do. And he's been upstate since.
How long has he been in jail?
Going on 6 years now.
Antoinette stares.
And he's innocent?
They found the guy that did it, but they still sent Colin away.
She takes on a troubled expression. Colin enters the visiting room at the prison. He halts as he spots Antoinette sitting with KC. They both stand. Colin approaches.
You remember Antoinette?
It's nice to see you.
Been a long time.
They sit together.
When the police arrested me that night, that was it. I haven't been back home since. My life ended right there. You know, my family in Trinidad, I haven't seen any of them. Most of these prisoners, they know deep down they put themselves here. But I don't have that comfort.
Antoinette leans back in her chair, blinking rapidly. In the phone room, Colin holds the receiver to his ear.
Yes? Hello?
Hi, Grandma. It's Colin.
Oh, my God. Colin, I miss you so much.
Yeah, I miss you too. I called to wish you a happy birthday.
Another year older. Not sure I feel like celebrating it.
How is everyone?
Everyone is doing fine. Your father's still working at the school, coaching the teams and all that. We talk about you.
Come on, you're done. Let's go. Time's up. Come on, let's go. Please, I just need one moment.
That's a direct order. Get off the fucking phone. You're getting written up.
Are you still there?
The bald guard paces away.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, everything is fine, Grandma. But look.
Noise.
I gotta go. But I just want you to know that I love you and I miss you.
I love you too. I'll tell your father that you called.
Hey, hold up, come on.
Colin turns and strikes the bald guard. He throws another punch and other guards drag him off.
Stop, go!
Three guards carry Colin by his arms and legs. They drop him on the floor of a maintenance room.
Stand up.
Colin stands in front of the bald guard and three others.
Remove your clothes. I said, remove your fucking clothes.
A guard clubs Colin. The prisoner drops, then gets up and unbuttons his shirt. Colin pulls the shirt off, then removes his undershirt and lowers his pants. The guards brutally beat the inmate with his pants around his ankles. In an office.
Mr. Warner, we will not tolerate attacks on the staff. You're being sentenced to 2 years in solitary confinement.
In his cell, Colin paces back and forth, bobbing and swinging his arms. He stands by the window, staring out. In her living room, Antoinette writes a letter.
Colin, I want you to know that I believe in your innocence. It's hard to accept that I don't have the power to take you out of there. That the best thing I can hope for is peace of mind. If you focus on your breathing, it'll bring you out of your mind and back into your body. Just know that you are not alone.
Colin reads the letter, holding a photo of Antoinette and Sasha. In a small outdoor cell, Colin jogs in a circle. A glimpse shows a boy on a beach, running in a circle as a man urges him on. Colin runs in the outdoor cell. Video shows war and violent riots. George H.W. Bush gives a speech.
I will keep America moving forward, always forward, for a better America, for an endless, enduring dream and 1,000 points of light. This is my mission, and I will complete it.
With his dreadlocks grown back, Colin walks through a cell block. Words appear, 12 years. Colin greets a fellow inmate with a fist bump, then continues on to his own cell. Photos hang on the walls. Colin grabs an envelope off a small shelving unit stocked with items. He sits on the bed. He pulls a letter from the envelope and unfolds it, finding a photo of his grandmother. Colin regards the smiling woman. Reading the letter, he wears a somber expression. Later, he sticks the photo of his grandmother to the wall. In a flashback, young Colin watches his grandmother bring him a birthday cake with flickering candles. The elderly woman kisses his forehead. As an adult in his prison cell, Colin envisions blowing out the candles. At home in her bedroom, Antoinette reads a letter.
I get to realize now that prison is more mental than physical. I have the power to at least control certain little things. I refuse to become what they label me. That wasn't part of me. I tell myself, go back and fight. Get out.
Colin writes in a classroom.
I need to go to the law library.
Okay, I'll put you down.
The female guard walks off.
Thanks.
In a library, he takes notes.
The truth cannot be hidden forever. My goal was clear my name. And I knew I had to live to clear my name.
In bed, Antoinette holds the letter to her chest. A stack of letters sits nearby. Later, she flips through old photos. In the visiting room, she sits with Colin.
I was looking through these old photo albums, and I found these. Oh my God. Look at this.
They both smile.
Do you remember that day I fell off my bike? It was right by Kingston Park, and I was lying there all banged up, and you saw me, and you took me by the arm, and you carried my bike all the way home. I always knew you were a good kid.
Wearing a tender expression, Antoinette gently grips Colin's hand. They lock eyes, and she smiles bashfully. Now Colin takes a call in the inmate phone room.
I spoke to the lawyer, but they're not going to take the case. They read over the brief you wrote, but they don't think there's enough for an appeal. But listen, man, I got another lawyer who's going to take a look at it, all right? Thanks.
Trembling, Colin hangs up. The tearful man bows his head and sobs. In his cell, Colin reads a letter.
Colin, I know in my heart there's justice for you. There is good in this world. And there are people out here who love you. If nothing else, have faith in us. And when you walk out of those prison gates, I'll be waiting. Yours, Antoinette.
KC meets with a lawyer.
People in Colin's situation rarely get a competent defense at trial. The system doesn't work for people who can't afford to defend themselves. Right. So what we do is look for mistakes that were made at trial that could invalidate a conviction.
And what if you don't find any mistakes?
We've already found several in our preliminary review. There's more than enough to work with here.
All right. Well, I'm gonna need some time to put the money together.
Yes, 2,000 from the church groups.
In a living room, Casey, Antoinette, and Colin's mom count cash.
That just puts us over 10,000. We're still 5 short.
I can float the rest.
Are you sure about that?
Casey nods.
Yeah.
In his living room, Casey watches television.
President Clinton signed the crime bill into law, closing the chapter on his largest legislative victory to date.
Longer sentences, 3 strikes and you're out, 60 new capital punishment offenses, more prisons, more prevention, 100,000 more police.
Maybe. What's this $5,000 line of credit? We didn't take this out?
Casey's pregnant wife hands him a document. He looks it over.
I had to pull some funds for the appeal.
How are we gonna afford this? There's about to be 4 of us soon, and we're already behind on everything as it is.
I picked up extra hours at work. And I'm gonna work weekends at the other garage.
When were you gonna tell me about this?
Babe, I didn't want you to worry. You have enough to think about.
She gives him an uneasy look. At the prison, a guard leads Colin to a private room.
It's this one right here.
Colin enters and sits on a low-standing double bed. In her car, Antoinette anxiously puts on her purse. She gets out. She strides forward, then halts, staring at the prison in front of her. Antoinette takes a deep breath. In the private cell, Colin slowly takes off his shirt. He stares nervously at Antoinette, who removes her headscarf. She gazes into his eyes. Colin wears a vulnerable look. Slowly, Antoinette helps him remove his undershirt. She studies his slender physique. Antoinette runs her fingertips over long scars on Colin's chest. She takes off her bra, revealing her breasts. Colin admires her and she gazes back at him. Sunlight shines through a barred window nearby. Antoinette caresses Colin's face. He gently holds her arm. Later, the lovers lie in bed together, kissing. Colin moves on top of Antoinette, and she holds him close. They gently kiss. Later, they snuggle closely. Antoinette lies against his chest. In a prison classroom, Colin approaches a teacher. Other students applaud. The teacher presents a document to Colin and shakes his hand. Other students get called up. In his cell, Colin hangs the diploma next to the photo of his grandmother. Wearing a Santa hat, he poses for photos with Antoinette and Sasha. In a courtroom, KC watches the appeals lawyer.
Your Honor, the first lawyer made several motions. If you'll just bear with me.
KC scowls.
Your Honor, we did find 2 instances in which the trial lawyer
appropriately called for a mistrial.
Mr. Logan, would you please proceed?
Sorry.
Casey holds his head in his hands. Later, he faces the lawyer.
I'm sorry. I don't think we'll get any traction with this judge.
How do you expect him to listen when you don't have the facts of the case, don't? This is a man's life you're dealing with.
We presented the strongest grounds for appeal. If you don't agree, feel free to seek other counsel.
With what money?
I'll let you know when I receive a formal ruling.
The attorney walks off. Casey stares after him in disbelief. At home, Casey paces in the kitchen. Hesitantly, he grabs the phone.
Hello?
Hey, how'd it go?
They ain't hearing it. I'm sorry, Trent.
We're gonna keep fighting for you. Whatever it takes.
I should get going. Thank you, Gretchen.
Casey hangs up. He stares off thoughtfully. In prison, Colin stands by the phone, hanging his head. Nighttime. An aerial view glides over an area of the city. Words appear. 15 years.
I will be putting before the legislature measures to eliminate work release and abolish parole for violent felons. Violent felons belong in jail.
Words appear. Governor George Pataki, inaugural address.
Let me also note, I will ask the legislature to pass, and I will sign and enforce the death penalty.
On a street, Casey walks to his car. Unlocking the driver's side door, he gets in.
Hey, Casey!
A bearded man approaches.
Let me get a ride downtown. My car broke down.
Yeah, sure.
Casey lets him in and drives off.
Gotta go to the courthouse by Cotton Plaza.
Got a case?
Nah, not for me. I'm a process server. I serve legal documents.
Meet a lot of lawyers doing that?
Sure. That's all I meet.
Casey stares in thought. At a government building, he approaches a counter.
Hi, I'd like to take the process server exam.
Fill out these forms and bring them back when you're done.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next.
Process server.
Casey hands out business cards.
Process server. Thank you. Process server. Fair prices.
You know South Brooklyn well?
I know all of Brooklyn well.
Great. Why don't you come by tomorrow?
A stocky lawyer gives Casey a card and leaves. At a house, Casey rings the doorbell. Grinning, the stocky lawyer answers.
Hey, come on in.
A smiling blonde woman approaches.
I'm Casey.
Oh, nice to meet you, Casey. I'm Shirley.
Where are you from?
Ireland. How about yourself?
Trinidad.
Oh, fellow Islander.
That's right.
These are going to Brooklyn Superior.
A shirtless man wearing a towel walks downstairs. The lawyer grins.
We'll be finding a real office once we're a little more up and running.
Got it. Thanks.
Thank you.
In his cell, Colin takes a letter from an opened envelope. A heading reads, Notice of Parole Hearing. He studies the official letter, then sets it on his desk. Colin gazes off. In the conjugal visit room, Colin and Antoinette get dressed. She sits beside him and wraps an arm around his shoulders. The inmate shifts his anxious gaze.
It's over now. As soon as you go before that parole board, you're going to be a free man. And I'm going to take you home.
Antoinette smiles. Colin looks away. Cupping his cheek, she turns his face to her.
It's just a matter of time.
In a prison common area, Colin and Antoinette stand face to face.
Do you take this man to be your husband, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, until death do you part?
I do.
Antoinette takes a gold ring from an onlooker. Colin slips a similar wedding band onto her finger.
By virtue of the authority vested in me under the laws of the state of New York, I now pronounce you husband and wife.
Smiling, Colin and Antoinette kiss. Casey and his wife stand nearby.
It's time.
The newlyweds separate, and Colin gives a sad nod. He starts away with a female guard. Pausing, Colin glances back at his wife and friend with a grin. Antoinette's somber smile fades. Now, Colin walks to a set of double doors. He steps outside the prison in slow motion. Colin finds Antoinette waiting for him. Behind her, an exterior gate hangs open. Antoinette greets him with a warm smile. Colin steps close to his wife. He looks the lovely woman up and down. Smiling, he takes her chin in both hands and kisses her. Now, a guard escorts Colin into a hearing room. The inmate sits before a panel of men in suits.
Morning. You're Colin Warner?
Yes, sir.
The panelist puts on his glasses.
You were found guilty of murder second degree by jury verdict, is that right?
Yes, sir.
You've now done 15 years?
Yes.
Why the shooting, Mr. Warner?
Mr. Ruffello, I didn't commit this crime. I've been wrongfully incarcerated for 15 years, and all I want is my freedom.
But, I'm sorry to interrupt you, your criminal record goes back to 1979, and in your disciplinary record, you've been written up for assaults on both inmates and staff, possession of weapons, and a host of other charges, all of which would indicate that you are, in fact, a very violent person.
I was arrested when I was 18 years old. And being that I was innocent, it was just very difficult for me to adjust to prison life. But I've since addressed that issue. I got my GED. I got 2 years of community college. I'm helping guys get their GEDs down. I'm a teacher's aide.
You've addressed the problem by accumulating 1,284 days in solitary confinement, where it was recommended that you lose 2 years of good time.
Sir, I didn't ask to be here. I didn't even commit a crime to put me here.
Mr. Warner, a jury in a court of competent jurisdiction says you did. And that's what we follow. You want to continue to fight this issue? By all means, get yourself an attorney. Take it to the Court of Appeals. Take it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Take it to wherever you will. But until a court of higher jurisdiction says that you are innocent, as far as we're concerned, you are guilty of murder. So I need you to be aware that your protestations of innocence fall on deaf ears. Now, can you explain your violent behavior while you were in prison?
You don't accept my reasons?
That's quite right. I don't accept those reasons. They may be excuses, damn poor ones at that, but they're certainly not reasons. And if you don't know the difference between a reason and an excuse, then, sir, I suggest you look it up in a dictionary. For this panel to grant parole now would so diminish the gravity of the crime as to undermine respect for the law. Mr. Warner is denied parole.
In his cell, Colin sits with his eyes closed. In the visiting room, he sits with Antoinette.
You know, we can find another way.
No.
We can.
They're not gonna let me out.
I won't accept it.
You have to accept it. You got to stop coming up here.
You asked me to be your wife.
Colin averts his gaze.
You don't just give up on that.
What do I have to give up on? They took everything from me. Everything. And they're gonna keep me in here until I say I kill that man. You know I would die before I do that.
Colin gets up. He leaves his wife at the table. A guard follows him. Antoinette's face clenches with tears. At home, KC answers the phone.
Hello?
Brethren, you have to stop all of this. You gotta stop trying to get me out. You need to just forget about
this. Listen.
We gotta stop it, all right? I can't keep stringing Antoinette along in this either. Just stop coming up here. You're never gonna get me out. All right?
Brethren.
Do you understand me? I said stop!
Just stop this!
Brethren, listen.
Casey lowers the phone with a somber gaze. He hangs his head. Daytime. Casey sits at his living room coffee table, flipping through documents. He holds a document in each hand, glancing between them. Casey stares off in thought. Driving, he arrives outside the prison. He sits with Colin in the visiting room.
I'm gonna do the next appeal myself. Brethren, I know what to do now. If we keep reaching for legal technicalities, we ain't gonna get no rhythm. There's not a judge in Brooklyn who's gonna let you out on murder charges unless he thinks you're innocent. But we have to do our own investigation and show them what really happened. Brethren, you didn't kill that man. We should be able to prove it.
Why are you still at this, man? You got your family, you got your job, you got your life. You know, why you keep wasting your time on me?
It's not just about you. It's bigger than that. It could be me in here. Sometimes I feel like it is me.
At night, the stocky lawyer opens his front door to find KC.
I need to talk to you.
Come on in.
They sit at a dining table. Shirley pours coffee.
I have a friend who's in jail for a murder he didn't commit. He's been locked up for more than 15 years now, and we can't get no justice for him. Everything we do comes up short. And he's got no fight left in him. I'll work for free if you take a look at his case.
Do you have his court records?
Yeah.
Shirley shrugs at her husband.
Okay. Bring everything you have next time you come.
I got it all in my car right now.
Later, they study documents.
Look here. The witness mentioned Anthony again. Anthony actually told people he was going to kill Marvin.
There's no murder weapon. No forensics. The autopsy report doesn't make any sense. How could the bullet have a downward trajectory if it was a drive-by shooting? If this is all they had, the prosecution's work is sloppy to the point of being unethical.
Now, the stocky attorney meets with KC.
I found a release record for Anthony Gibson. First time he was up for parole, they let him out. The eyewitness, Clarence Lewis, was deported back to Haiti after serving 6 years for armed robbery. We have a statement from the victim's brother, Leon, who says he was on the scene moments after the shooting. Now, the other potential witness who stands out, Clayton Benton, goes by Mossop, told the police he was there when Marvin was shot, but he didn't see anything. Whatever the truth is, these kids know it.
At home, Casey packs his daughter's backpack.
Come on.
He lifts her onto the table and buttons her shirt.
You wanna be good today? Huh?
Yeah.
His wife and older daughter enter.
So So serious. Could I have a kiss?
Casey kisses the girl, then his wife.
I'll pick you up after school.
In an office, Casey approaches a balding man's desk.
Jim, I need you to pull someone's record.
He hands over cash, and Jim hides it beneath a clipboard. Later, in a hallway, Jim brings Casey a file.
Pull this criminal record. INS, DMV. It's all in there. He's got a warrant on a grand larceny charge in Brooklyn, and INS has an open deportation order against him. He didn't show for any of his court dates, and he skipped on his bond.
An aerial view takes in public housing buildings. In his car, Casey stares at a housing building's front door. Grabbing his jacket, he gets out of the car. A man goes inside the building, and Casey quickly approaches the entrance.
Hold the door, please.
The bearded resident eyes Casey, but lets him pass. Casey climbs a staircase with the bearded resident following. Casey nervously glances back at him. Casey continues up several flights, making sure the resident remains behind him. Eyeing Casey, the bearded man heads to an apartment door. Casey looks down from the landing above. The resident glances up the stairs as he shuts his door, marked 3F. Now, Casey arrives home.
Where you been, Aldi?
Working?
His wife gives him a skeptical look. She stands from her chair.
What's wrong with you?
What are you talking about?
Your daughter waited outside for an hour before the school called me at work. You think that's safe? Our little girl standing outside on the street like that? You can't tell me you care more about Colin than you do your own children.
You know that ain't true.
Then why you do things like this? You know what my mother thinks? She thinks you killed that guy and Colin get caught for it. She can't think of any other reason why you would keep this up for so long.
What do you want me to do, Brianna? You want me to leave him? I can't just pretend this situation doesn't exist.
Yeah, well, this situation exists too. You better hurry up and figure that out.
Brianna storms off. Casey hangs his head. He sits on his sleeping daughter's bed and gives her a kiss. The girl wakes up.
I'm sorry.
In his apartment, the murdered victim's brother, Leon, goes through mail. He opens an envelope and takes out a letter. Reading it, Leon sinks to a chair at the kitchen table. He sets down the letter. Leon stares off, then crumples the letter. He tosses it in the trash. With a deep breath, Leon glances around thoughtfully. He retrieves the letter from the trash can. Leon dials his phone.
Hello, you've reached the law offices of William S. Robody. Please leave a message and we'll return your call.
Hey, this is Leon Grant.
Look, I'm not going to be able to help you with any case.
The stocky lawyer, Robody, hurries to his phone.
Reach out and respond to your letter.
Leon, don't hang up.
Leon, are you there?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling.
Look, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to be able to help you.
Oh, I won't remember anything anyway. It was so long ago.
Please, just hear me out. I'm very sorry about your brother, and I don't want to dredge this up for you, but they have the wrong guy in prison. Colin Warner didn't do it.
If you look at the autopsy report, this wasn't a drive-by. It couldn't have been. It didn't happen the way the police said it did. Clarence Lewis lied.
And an innocent man is doing a life sentence.
I can't imagine what you and your family have gone through, but this doesn't help your brother.
At the lawyer's house.
I was around the corner from my high school when Clarence Lewis came up on his bike and he said, "Your brother got shot. Your brother Marvin, he got shot." He said, "I saw what happened."
Leon remembers approaching the crime scene.
I thought I was outside of my body because I couldn't believe that my brother had got shot. Police asked me if I knew anybody who might want to kill my brother. And I said, "No, but my friend here said he saw what happened." From that moment on, they held on to Clarence Lewis as a witness.
Were you present when they interviewed him?
Yeah, they took us down to the precinct, and I sat in the hallway while they interviewed him. They showed him mugshots for hours.
He remembers the young teen examining mugshots. A detective flips to Collins. Clarence wears a weary expression.
Eventually, he just pointed at somebody's picture.
"You mean Colin Warner?"
Leon nods.
"Yeah. I remember Detective Cassell raising his voice at Clarence. Did you see him with a gun?" Clarence said, "No, I don't see no gun." And he said, "What do you mean you don't see a gun? If he killed him, he had to have a gun. Did you see a gun?" Clarence, you could hear his voice quivering. I guess he had a gun. But I think at that point, he just wanted to go home.
Were you ever questioned by Detective Cassell?
Yeah. He came by my house the next day. And he laid out four photos on the table. And he said, "Do you know any of these guys?" And I said, "No, I don't know any of these guys." And then he pushed Colin Warner's photo out of the lineup. "You don't know this guy? You never seen this guy before?" And I said, I might have seen him before. The only reason I said that was because he was badgering me. I wanted him to stop, so I told him what he wanted to hear.
Robody looks at KC.
And then he said, "Well, that's the guy who shot your brother." And then he took up the photos and walked out the house.
At home, Antoinette gazes out a window at a passing helicopter. At a consulate, she stands at the counter.
"I need to track down a Haitian citizen. His name is Clarence Lewis. This is his deportation record. He was sent back to Haiti in 1988 when he was released from jail."
"Are you a relative?"
"No, but I'm investigating a case he's involved with."
"I'm sorry. We cannot give that information out to non-relative without authorization."
"This is incredibly important. Can you please just see if there's an address for him?"
"I'm sorry, I really can't."
"Listen, this man lied and put my husband in jail for 20 years, and I need him to come forward. Please."
The clerk regards Antoinette, then glances off. She types at her computer and studies the screen.
"He's listed as deceased. It says he was murdered in Port-au-Prince in 1994. I'm so sorry."
The clerk shakes her head. Antoinette collects her papers.
"Thank you."
At home, Shirley sets out dinner plates. She answers the phone.
"Hello?
This is Anthony Gibson. I got your letter about Colin Warner."
"Could you hang on 1 second? Bill! Bill!"
"Yeah?"
"It's Anthony."
In a meeting.
"Do you remember the events of April 10th, 1980?
A stenographer stares at Anthony.
"I remember it like it was yesterday. And my cousin had been shot a few days before."
"When you left the house with a gun, what were you intending to do?"
"I had every intention of killing Marvin. Or anybody else who was involved with killing my cousin."
Anthony remembers loading a revolver, then approaching a group.
"Yo, Marvin, wait up. Yo, Marvin! I heard Spangler's dead, man.
You know who did it?
Marvin scoffs and walks away.
Can you show us how you shot him?
Anthony motions for Robidoux to stand. He turns the lawyer around and mimes holding a gun to his head. He remembers aiming the revolver at Marvin.
I touched the back of Marvin's head with the gun.
In slow motion, Marvin's friends flee the scene. Anthony lowers the gun. He stares down at the body, his face tensed with rage. Backing away, he tucks the revolver in his waistband. Anthony faces Robidoux.
And that was that.
They both sit back down.
Was Clarence Lewis present?
No, he was not. He lied at the trial.
What about his testimony was a lie?
Everything. He wasn't there. You know, the real witnesses, they never took the stand.
When was it you first heard of Colin Warner?
You know, right after my arrest, they showed me his picture at the precinct and asked me if I knew him. And I tell him I never seen this man before in my life.
Anthony shares a tense look with KC. At night, trains move on elevated tracks. Leon answers his front door to find KC outside.
I want to talk to you about the case.
Anthony show up?
Yeah, he came in today.
And that's it then, right? You got everything you need.
That's what I want to talk to you about. We need a witness to come forward.
You really need to keep dragging people into this?
No, it's not that simple. You see, Anthony's statement doesn't have any legal merit. You can't try someone twice for the same crime. A judge will just look at it and say he's just trying to get his friend out of jail. You gotta understand, we're asking the state to admit that they were wrong. If they can find a way out, they're gonna take it.
Look, this was 20 years ago. I lost touch with those guys. I don't know none of them guys no more.
What about Marsup?
I haven't seen that guy since my brother died. I mean, I saw him in the street one time. He wouldn't even look at me. I wouldn't know where to find him.
He lives in the Bronx. I know his apartment.
Can you give me a kiss?
In his car, KC kisses his youngest daughter.
No, Hoppy stays with me.
He takes her stuffed rabbit.
I'll pick you up at 3, okay?
Okay.
KC watches her go. Now he sits in the car with Leon. KC points to the bearded tenant who approaches his building.
There you go, right there.
Leon gets out and heads to the building. KC looks at his phone and finds an incoming call from Brianna. He declines the call. Inside the apartment building, Leon follows the bearded man. He anxiously watches him.
Yo, Maso? Who you? You not remember me?
No.
Me Marvin, brother. You not remember Marvin?
Masup descends a few stairs. He approaches Leon with a troubled look.
Me can't forget Marvin, man. Marvin, me brethren. Marvin were the first man me walk with when me come to New York. You're the first man I see get killed in front of me.
If you was there, why you do nothing?
Brother, what could I have done, huh? I live amongst them. Yeah, they come after me, too. You gotta remember, man, back then we were young. We thought we were men, but we were just kids. Why you here, man?
That man Colin is still in jail.
Ah, man. I got too many problems beginning to evolve without.
Now you know he had nothing to do with
it. Come back here.
Later, KC arrives home. He glances around the apartment with a look of concern. KC continues inside.
Brianna?
He goes into the kitchen and sets his jacket on the table. KC Casey peers into an empty room. He opens a bedroom door and finds a bare mattress inside. Now he uses his phone.
Hello, you've reached Brianna at the right number, but the wrong time. Hello, you've reached Brianna at the right number, but the wrong time. Leave a message.
In her darkened apartment, Antoinette lights a candle. At home, Casey sits on the couch watching TV. Words appear. 21 years. Antoinette blows out a match. In the prison visiting room, Colin faces Leon.
I wanted to tell you that I didn't know your brother, but there were nights where I would just stay up thinking about him. I don't know what I did to put me here, but I would pray to him at night, man, and hope that he was at peace.
Leon looks downward and nods. At home, Casey flips through documents. Stacks of paperwork sit on the table before him. He glances between two papers. Casey picks up his phone and dials.
I'm sorry to call you so late, but I found something. Have you ever come across a witness named Hassan Wilton?
No. Who's that?
I found a transcript from his grand jury testimony that says he was with Clarence Lewis at the time of the shooting. So that means he saw
whatever Clarence saw.
That's right.
Now Casey watches Jim run a search on his computer.
Nope. I got no records for Hassan Wilton.
Sure.
Nothing there.
Jim slides Casey a wad of cash and he takes it. Now Casey drives on a city street.
Hello?
Hey, I'm trying to track down someone you might know.
In a restaurant, Casey and Anthony approach a man's table.
Redrin.
Anthony sits. The man stares at him fearfully. Anthony motions to Casey.
This is a friend of Colin Warner's.
Whatever you're gonna do to me, do it. I'll go with you, but I want you to tell Colin I'm sorry. Those cops, they used me. I'm 15 years old. I have a brain to analyze shit, and it fucked me up now.
Redrin, he's not here to hurt you. We're gonna get him out.
The man's still in jail.
20 years now.
The man's face clenches with tears. He hangs his head. Now, Robody interviews the witness.
Can you walk me through what happened on April 10th, 1980?
Yeah, I was hanging around Erasmus High School. I was with Clarence Lewis and a couple other kids from the neighborhood.
He recalls staring down the city block as a teenager.
Were you close enough to see where the shot was fired?
Clarence looks in the same direction.
No, we were not. We were around the corner.
Did the police ever come to talk to you?
2 weeks after the shooting, they came to my house. They gave me orange juice and a candy bar. And they showed me a photo of Colin Warner and said that he was the one that shot Marvin Graham. Then they said we had to go down to the precinct, but we never made it to the precinct. Next thing I knew, I was being questioned in front of a grand jury.
You remember what you testified to in front of the grand jury?
I said what they told me to say.
What does that mean exactly?
It means I said that Colin was the shooter. That I saw him do it. You know, I never seen Colin. I don't know Colin. And the way they was questioning me, like, if I was the shooter, like I did something wrong.
He shakes his head.
They told me what to say. So that's what I said.
In the prison visiting room, Colin flips through a tall stack of documents. KC looks on.
It's all in there, Bridget.
There's no way anyone could look at this and deny your innocence, no. We finally have everything we need.
Listen, we gotta take a picture for the press real quick.
For who? I have a media strategy.
KC holds up a camera. Colin frowns.
Yo, stop looking like you killed someone.
Colin grins and KC takes his photo. Now KC works at home.
Hello, New York One News.
Yeah, I have some new information about a murder case and I would like to speak to a reporter, please.
In an office, a woman gets documents delivered to her. She flips through them.
Let me call you back.
The wavy-haired woman hangs up, then dials another call.
Kings County.
Yes, this is Diane Cardwell from the New York Times. Can you connect me to the Brooklyn DA's office?
In a TV news studio.
Joining us now by phone from Clinton Correctional Facility is Colin Warner. Now, I understand you were arrested in 1980.
Once you're convicted, there's no longer a presumption of innocence, if there ever was.
There's a presumption of guilt.
And the state will try to knock you down until you give up. So you have to have a strong foundation to stand firm and fight. I was arrested when I was 18 years old. I spent 20 years in prison.
Yeah, Barry paged me.
I've been in prison longer
Bob, than we've got an appeal I want you to investigate.
Colin Warner?
You gotta be kidding me.
It's on New York One right now.
I've been wrongfully incarcerated for over 21 years now.
My life was taken from me unjustly. And we're finally able to prove it.
Now, I understand you were denied parole.
They won't let me out unless I express remorse for a crime that I did not commit.
And I'm not willing to do that. So I remain in prison.
In the spring of 1980, Leon Grant's brother was murdered in the Flatbush section of Brooklyn. Years later, Grant now says he helped put an innocent man in jail. Mr. Warner's co-defendant, Anthony Gibson, has also come forward with the startling admission that he acted alone. The Brooklyn DA's office is reviewing the case.
You had your blood pressure taken before, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. Now, you know, if you lie to me, your buddy's gonna stay in prison. You understand?
Hassan nods at the investigator.
Were you with Clarence Lewis at the time of the shooting?
Yes.
Did you see the shooting take place?
No, we were several blocks away.
Let me ask this another way. Is there any way that Clarence Lewis could have witnessed the shooting?
At home, KC wakes up and answers the phone.
Hello?
We've been called back to the court tomorrow.
He sits up in bed.
I thought we were set for May.
We were.
He hangs up. In a courtroom, Robidoux enters with KC. Antoinette sits in the gallery. She spots KC and smiles. He sits beside her. Robidoux goes to the defendant's table. A judge takes the bench.
The court is in session. Please rise.
Everyone stands.
Counsel is present. Go ahead, Mr. Schneider.
Your Honor, based on our findings, the people join in application with the defense to dismiss the indictment and vacate the conviction of Colin Warner.
KC doubles over and Antoinette brings her hands to her mouth. She hugs KC.
Thank you.
The DA shakes Robidoux's hand. Robidoux approaches Antoinette and KC. The two men embrace. Antoinette beams. She hugs Robidoux.
After 21 years in prison for a crime he did not commit, Colin Warner will now be a free man.
There's some things we might not be able to correct in life. But as far as leaving an innocent man in jail, we can't let that stand. This never should have happened.
If Colin Warner had lived in Texas
or Florida or Louisiana, he would have been executed long ago.
Colin walks through the prison.
Congratulations, Ray. Just saw the news.
He glances at the inmate with surprise, then enters a common area. Inmates give him a standing ovation. A prisoner shakes his hand. Colin glances around with a stoic expression. He takes a breath. At home, Brianna serves dinner to her daughters and mother. She answers the door to find KC. He regards her anxiously, and she embraces him. In his cell, Colin packs items into a duffel bag. He sits on his cot and stares off pensively. Driving, KC arrives at the prison with Brianna and Antoinette. They pass reporters and a news van parked outside. Inside, Colin fist bumps another prisoner.
Peace be, brother.
A guard holds a clipboard.
Sign here.
Colin stares at the mugshot of his 18-year-old self attached to the release form. He signs. Robity leads Colin outside. With a grin, Colin saunters toward the open gate ahead. Antoinette's face clenches in tears. Wearing an all-white outfit, she embraces her released husband.
I knew it.
She kisses Colin. Casey and Colin's mother stand nearby. Colin walks into his mother's outstretched arms. His face tenses with emotion.
Love you so much.
She lets him go and motions to KC. Colin rubs KC's shoulder, then pulls him into a hug. Later, Colin rides in the back seat of KC's car, staring out the window at the distant city. KC glances at him in the rear view. Cut to black.
Please don't let it be a cell.
In an apartment bedroom, Colin awakens in bed. He lifts his head off the pillow. Sunlight shines through white curtains over several windows. A young girl enters.
Daddy, wake up!
She climbs on top of Colin and he tickles her. Colin gives her a kiss, then regards her lovingly. Cut to black. Words appear. Colin and Antoinette move to Georgia with their two kids, Cheek and Nahonda. A news report features the real Colin.
I'm not angry at nobody. Everybody has the burden to bear. This is my burden. And hopefully I can come strong from this and move on with my life.
Carl K.C. King lives in Brooklyn with his wife and kids. He continues to investigate wrongful convictions.
It has been a long battle, but I finally won. And I would like to tell all those guys who are in prison who are claiming that they're innocent not to stop fighting.
There are 2.4 million people in prison in the United States. An estimated 120,000 prisoners are innocent. A photo shows the real Antoinette and Colin posing together. Fade to black.
Take me to your river.
Written and directed by Matt Ruskin. Produced by Namdi Asamoah. Produced by Natalie Galaska, Matt Ruskin. Co-producer Matthew Thurm. Executive producers Jonathan Baker, Joshua Blum, Lila Yacoub. Director of photography Ben Cutchins. Production designer Kate McCannany. Edited by Joe Hutching, Paul Greenhouse. Music by Mark Degley Antoni. Costume designer Megan Kasperlik. Casting by Avi Kaufman. As a man with many crimes, come up Lakeith Stanfield. As my sins flow Namdi Asomugha. Oh, I wanna come Natalie Paul. Every part Amari Cheatham. But there's blood on Marcia Stephanie Blake. Nestor Carbonell. Zach Grenier. Yul Vasquez. Josh Payas. Ron Canada. With Bill Camp. Luke Forbes. Gabinga Akanagbe. Adrian Lennox. Sarah Goldberg. Armand Schultz. Executive producers Anya Borg, Troy Johansson, Avi Kaufman, Alyssa Shipp. Co-producers Eddie Collins, Ari Isler, Attila Uecker. Story consultants Colin Warner, Carl Casey King. Based on WBEZ Chicago's This American Life episode, DIY, by Anya Borg. Crown Heights, in loving memory of Cheikh Sharif Roderick Warner. Unit Production Manager Julie Buck, First Assistant Director Kit Bland, Second Assistant Director Katie Kramer. Cast, in order of appearance: Luke Forbes as Anthony Gibson, Lakeith Stanfield as Colin Warner, Adrian Lennox as Grace, Namdi Asomugha as Carl Casey King, Marcia Stephanie Blake as Brianna, Carlos Hendricks as Instructor James, James Udom as Rasta, Muhammad Ali as Stunt Double Ex-Con, Natalie Paul as Antoinette, Zach Grenier as Detective Cassell, Patrick Walsh as Stunt Detective, Josh Payas as D.A. Mangano, Jennifer Fush as Court Clerk, Leon Morenzi as Charles, Skylin Brooks as Clarence Lewis, James Ciccone as Desk Officer, Lynn McCullough as Female Judge, Donnie Yao as Stunt Double Chinese Restaurant Owner, Nestor Carbonell as Bruce Regenstrike, Joss Anderson as Barber, Ron Canada as Judge Marcy, Joel Van Loo as Anthony's Public Defender, Amari Cheatham as Leon Grant, Bruce Regenstrike as Jury Foreman, Raymond Fernandez as Fernando, Gabenga Akinagbe as Samson, Hunter Emery as Ricky Guard, Shauna A. Solomon as Officer Duffy, Ron Peretti as Prison Official, Elliot Santiago as Stunt Latino Inmate, Glenn Lee as Latino Inmate 1, Paul Douglas Anderson as Latino Inmate 2, Babukar Kamara as Prisoner Dread, Armand Schultz as Bob Logan, Oberon K.A. Ajapong as Peter, Bill Camp as William Robody, Sarah Goldberg as Shirley Robody, Marissa Redonti as Female Justice, Yul Vasquez as Commissioner Raffello, Janice Dardaris as Commissioner Morrison, Robert C. Kirk as Process Server Boss, Nuri Benz as Sasha, Brian Tyree Henry as Clayton Massive Benton, Kenya Brome as Consulate Secretary, Corey St. Laurent as Marvin Grant, Ross Enoch McCurdy as Hassan Wilton, Sherelle Cargill as Diane Cardwell, Kristen Shaughnessy as Kristen Shaughnessy, Dan Shore as D.A. Snyder, Noah Lee Margetts as Investigator O'Connor, Egypt Johnson as Inmate Samuel, Miles Crawford as Reporter, Levy Ariel Ricks as Colin's Daughter, Michael Ralph as Additional Voice Actor, Stunt Coordinator Manny Severio, Stunt Guard Chris Gambos, Stunt Utility Mitchell Mack, Stand-ins, Corey St. Laurent, David Walcott, Robin Cohn, Stephen Mack, Judy Galluccio. Songs, My Conversation, written by Edward O'Sullivan, Lloyd Chalmers, and Jimmy Riley, performed by Slim Smith and the Uniques. The Message, written by Sylvia Robinson, Edward Fletcher, Clifton Chase, and Melvin Glover, performed by Grandmaster Mel Mel. Let's Live in Love, written and performed by Horace Andy. Just to Get a Rep, written by Christopher Martin and Keith Alam, performed by Gangstar. River, written by Joshua Block, Todd Michael Bridges, Austin Jenkins, Chris Vivian, performed by Leon Bridges. Copyright 2016 by Darker Than Blue LLC, all rights reserved. Darker Than Blue LLC is the author of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH. Amazon Studios.